Hey guys, and welcome to the Family Business Indaba podcast.
We are the voice of African family business, promoting generational wealth and generational legacies.
And my name is Susan Tendi.
And I am Nikia Amani.
And we're going to be taking you through the journey of African family business. Good morning, Rachel.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us for this session of FB21. We're so honored to have you here.
Such a pleasure to be with you.
I'm going to let you have the floor and let you introduce yourself to our audience as they join, and let you get on with helping us find our leadership voice.
Great. So should we start? Do you have enough people on, or do you want to wait a little bit?
We have about three people. We have three people on, and I think we still got some people who are going to be joining. So okay. I think you can carry on. Those who are joining as we go will join as we go.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Titi, and thank you, Nikkei, for having me. Hello, everybody. Good morning. My name is Rachel Adams. I am a leadership specialist. I am a coach. And I have been working in the leadership development space now for 10 years. But I say that leadership development is something that I've been doing my entire life. I've always been fascinated with the journeys of personal mastery and of leading others and leading systems, because it's something for me that is vital, especially when you experience the world as a space that can be quite limiting in terms of possibilities because of the quality of leadership, whether it's in your family, whether it's in a country, whether it's a region, a company, an organization. We all know what it is like to experience leadership that doesn't allow expansion. And having had multiple experiences in my life that didn't allow for my own expansion and my growing into my possibilities, I was always fascinated by what one could do in order to improve the state of leadership. And that's why I started Narachi Leadership, whose intention is to build deep benches of leaders across the African continent by giving them transformative leadership tools that allow them first to grow internally before they can exude externally powerfully in their most authentic leadership. And so today, during this season, and thank you to Titi and Nikkei for the invitation to talk to you as family businesses about how to find your leadership voice during this time. And for me, I really want to focus on something that is called anti-fragility. So some of you may have come across the term anti-fragile. And it really was invented by an author, Nassim Taleb, who wrote a book called Antifragile: Things That Gain from Disorder. And really what he was trying to look at is what makes organizations, what makes communities, what makes countries beyond resilient in spaces where crises happen. His thesis was essentially that we're not very good at responding to random or risky incidences in life because we tend to build around the assumption that things will be the same. So while every organization will consider the fact that things may change, really what tends to happen is that we build our systems around an assumption, very subconsciously, that things will likely be about the same. And what he then said was when what he calls black swan events, events that are unexpected and quite catastrophic, happen, people just don't find themselves to be ready. And so what better time, of course, to explore this idea than during COVID-19? Because in this season, what we found is that, you know, people said things like, nobody saw this coming. Of course, not true. I mean, we've been talking about the possibility of a pandemic for decades now, right? But of course, people didn't quite take it seriously, right? What are the odds? What are the chances? that something so big could happen in terms of a virus. And so it was always coming to us, but we ignored it. That's part of what Nassim Taleb calls being fragile, which is not looking at the possibilities of what could happen. And so when we talk about anti-fragility versus being resilient, and resilient is a term that you probably hear more often, resilience is when you can do bounce back. In fact, we call resilience the art of the bounce back. It's being able to experience something, and because you've set up a system internally that allows you to walk through the process with a level of groundedness, you can then bounce back. Anti-fragility is something different. Anti-fragility is this wild idea that you can actually come out of this better, which is that you can go through COVID-19 and actually have an improved business, have improved self-leadership, have improved outlook about life and improved outlook about life because, and specifically, you've been present with the moment and what it's trying to teach you. And, you know, as an ontological and a neuroscience coach, one of the areas in which I focus on is trauma. And one of the things I dare to suggest to my clients is that actually traumas make you better. Because in the moment of the wounding, there's also a gifting that is taking place. Now, if you just focus on the wounding, what will happen is that you will spiral into the dynamics of that, what that wounding entails. If you focus on the gifting, which is what newness is being opened to me by having this very difficult experience, you can shift the way in which you see something. You can ask different questions. You can ask different what if questions. And so this anti-fragility concept shows us that there's a possibility to actually be grown and developed through difficult times. It also reminds us of a fundamental principle of attachment and non-attachment. We often say that in pain is caused by resisting what is, right? Suffering is caused by resisting what is. And so if something is happening and you're in resistance to it, what will then tend to happen is that you will find that there's a deterioration that happens not only in your mental state, but even in the way in which you're interacting with the world outside of you. And so this moment for me is a profound leadership moment. There's a profound possibility that we have as leaders to connect to anti-fragility, to actually get better through this. And so I want to talk about this in three parts, which is anti-fragile leadership, anti-fragile teams, and then just a little bit on anti-fragile organizations. I doubt we'll have time to get through the organizational piece, but because I'm speaking to individuals today, I want to focus particularly on the people aspect, which is, by the way, also my area of expertise. And so let's start with anti-fragile leadership. Now, all of you have heard the term VUCA, and you know people talk about VUCA all of the time. And the Center for Creative Leadership, much like me, got very fatigued with this term. And they created a new term which I really connect with during this time, which is RAPT. So RAPT is actually a Latin root, right? We find it in words like corrupt, abrupt, disruption. So it's a Latin root that literally means to break. And so in this moment, what we are experiencing, we keep calling it a disruption. If you really think of that Latin root of rupture, of breaking, what it is that we are all experiencing a breakdown, right? There is a shift in reality as we understand it that requires that we show up differently, that requires for us to admit that the old ways of doing things are not going to work. And so RAPT basically is an acronym that represents four terms and very important terms, which I think you will all recognize during this time. Rapid, it's when we experience changes that are happening very quickly, right? So we all know this happened with COVID-19. Initially, it was like Wuhan. It was called the Wuhan disease for a while. And then before we knew it, we were kind of recognizing, wait a minute, this thing seems to be spreading. And literally between February and March, we were all ramped up to a new reality. And so it's rapid. There is an overlap of activities. And also, information is coming from different sources. Realities are coming from different sources. And so as all of this is happening, the environment is becoming unpredictable, right? And so we are seeing that our assumptions, as I said earlier, become challenged. We are forced to reframe our thinking. Because, you know, as much as we can analyze, as much as we can strategize, as much as we can come up with new plans, the unpredictability just continues. And so as leaders, we are invited to be awake to this. Paradoxical is the P part of it, which is that, you know, a lot of the time in leadership, we are solving for one thing. We are solving for usually, depending on what kind of a person you are, the short term or the long term. But sometimes we are not solving for all of these things, for both of these things. And paradoxes require that we go and. So in this particular moment, for example, the questions that may emerge are, you know, what is important for your business in the short term, but also what is important for it in the long term? And how can you solve for both of those things? How can you make sure that you're not limiting your sight by just looking at the problem that you see emerging for you, instead of asking greater what if questions that then lead you to and answers? And finally, tanglement, right? Being tangled. Everything is connected. We live in a global village. This is a term we've been using all of the time, but it's taken on completely new meaning in this environment, which is that tanglement has also now meant contamination, has also now meant spread, has also now meant contagion. And so all of a sudden, tanglement presents us with a new challenge, whereas the global village might have been, for the most part, except maybe for recent politics with Brexit and all of those kinds of things, tanglement we had perceived as being positive. But now we are sort of saying, wait a minute, is this multiplicity of ecosystems actually dangerous for us? And what does that mean for your business? And in fact, within that tanglement, there also arises an opportunity to consider the possibilities of the expansion of your business beyond even the borders that you were in. And what I love is that the Center for Creative Leadership has shown us ways in which we can look at this rupt process and how we can shift within it. And so in the rapid space, one of the things that they suggest, which I absolutely love, is you shift to a new reality. So you'll notice that the rapid turns into reality, new reality. The unpredictable change turns into understanding. The paradoxical turns into new possibilities, and the tangled into transparency. And here's how that can happen for you. They suggest metaphoric reasoning. Now, you know, metaphors are imagery, words, constructs that we use to describe something by comparing it or replacing it with something else. So for example, we can say that a street system is like blood vessels, right? So when you think of a street system in a country or in a city, instead of just thinking of it as a street, you may start to think of it as a blood vessel, the blood vessel system in your body. And so blood represents the people that travel through the systems. Maybe the white blood cells represent the services within those streets, maybe police people or ambulances. And so when you use a metaphor, what happens is that for the people you're speaking to, things come alive in a different way. And so metaphoric reasoning as a leader allows you to shift people's thinking quite powerfully. And research has shown that when leaders speak with metaphors, when they can compare something to something not usual, but that actually brings the thing more alive, what then happens is that you can stretch the thinking of your people into new realities. Unpredictable, as we talked about, things are happening quickly because they're rapid, but that things start to change all the time. And so it's not always clear where we are headed. What is important in this space is what we call shared sense making, which is a collective memory, a collective sensing of what we are all experiencing versus one person is experiencing. For a business, there's nothing more important at this time than sharing ideas, than sharing senses, because we are all accessing different information systems, right? So for example, my colleague Rina, who might be on this call right now, was sharing with me that, you know, she knows a couple of people who are experiencing domestic violence during this time of COVID-19. Now, I don't know anybody in that position at this time, but I imagine that this may be happening to people. Of course, I know this is happening to people. I've read the news. But it wasn't taking on personal meaning for me until she said, hey, I've got a couple of friends who are experiencing it, who are having a really rough time because of their conditions within their homes. And so now we are basically putting together a conversation that addresses the specific problem. That's shared sense making. On my own, that might not have been a priority. With a colleague who is experiencing this from personal level, it allows us to nuance the way we are doing our business in this moment. Paradoxical, which is the and piece, being able to look at more than just one thing. What of course becomes important is integrative thinking, which is being able to put together different modalities, different ways of thinking and doing and sensing in the world that create new possibilities. So for example, one of the things I've been saying to leaders is this is an excellent time to be aware of the different personalities in your organization, because guess what? There are some personality types, if you use the MBTI, personality types that end with TP, those personality types tend to be fantastic with chaos. They can think much more clearly when things are chaotic. And so if you can integrate their thinking into the and possibilities that are available for you, you may find yourself coming up with better possibilities within the organization. And then finally, entanglement. And what they recommend as the Center for Creative Leadership is recognizing patterns, right? Being able to look at what are some of the things that are starting to emerge within this time. So I've already talked about one pattern already, which is that your geography has changed all of a sudden. So while many of us were coordinating our businesses within our local geographies and maybe beyond geography, there's an opportunity now to turn our businesses entirely online, to go entirely digital. And so because we start to notice the pattern of what are the possibilities that are available to us because we've done the integrative thinking that then allow us to get to a space of transparency. And transparency basically means you can see with new eyes. You can see what now is available to you that perhaps wasn't available even in this moment of chaos. And so what I love about this model really, and we can talk about it in the question and answer section more, is that really this represents for me metamorphosis. And metamorphosis is powerful because fundamentally, for me as a philosophy, I believe that the most powerful changes happen when we metamorphosize, right? Which is when we transform. So when we change is entirely pirouetting, which is creating something fundamentally different from where you are. Transformation or metamorphosis is becoming based on what is already organic. So as you're thinking about your businesses during this time, it's about asking yourself, what are some of the things that emerge in my understanding of the world and my understanding of my business that allow me to metamorphosize, to shift in a way that is quite natural and apparent because it's organic, but that allows us as a business to continue to thrive and possibly even to become better during this time. So, you know, so as an example, Uber in South Africa has been doing deliveries, as far as I understand, for organizations like Pick and Pay, because Pick and Pay all of a sudden has exponential online shopping and cannot deliver food to everybody with the demand that they have. But Uber, which is a business that already has the raw product, which is that they already have transport, have been able to pivot their business in order to allow them to help during this time of great need. And that is going to make their business better because it means that they can actually increase or expand their value proposition from what they've just been currently doing. So new avenues are created. And so if you can see this model, if you can start to think through some of the things you could start to tweak in your business, you will find how the opportunities emerge. The other thing I want to say for leaders is that it's important to understand that stress is actually an asset that you can use if you understand how to cultivate the right kind of stress, right? So we speak of stress in generic terms, but actually the body experiences stress differently. you can either be in a state of calm or you can be in a state of distress. And these are sort of the very extreme ends of this continuum. You know, when we are calm, we are bored. You know, we are not necessarily applying ourselves optimally in the environment in which we exist. But when we're distressed, we're actually burnt out and we're actually overwhelmed. And we actually find ourselves in survival mode. And it's very important that you watch out for your organizations. And this is part of finding the leadership voice, is how do you motivate and inspire people during this time that they don't find themselves bored or they don't find themselves burnt out? You know, so when people are sitting at home without as much activity as they're used to, they may find themselves starting to deteriorate in terms of energy. So they're on the calm, beyond the calm even, where they may be starting to get bored. In fact, people actually get suicidal within this space as well. But on the other hand, you may start to get burnout, and you may start to get people feeling like they are in survival mode. The leader's voice at this point is to keep people in that middle space where they're energized, where they're focused, where even with these transitions, they can feel that they can effortlessly move into the next way of being. And that is what we call being antifragile. And this is the space of what we call eustress. And eustress is the space of optimal performance. And so for you as a leader, it's to cultivate that you are in this space first, and that you can then get to a space in which you can motivate the team to be within that space as well. Let me just check quickly for time. So very quickly, I want to focus on five things that I think organizational leaders, I'll start with the leaders first, should really be considering in terms of what it means to be anti-fragile during this time. And that as you find your leadership voice, you're thinking within this framework of what does it mean for me to show up as a leader who's helping the organization, not just to survive, but to thrive during this time. The first piece is framing. And I keep saying that the people who are going to come out of this better than others are the people who frame this moment in a way that is helpful. We know that the way in which the human brain experiences the world is actually hallucinatory. So our brains are like projectors. Reality is created by us. Reality isn't objective, which is why you and I can experience this exact moment differently. We talk a lot about this in neuroscience. And so in many ways, what you are saying as the leader, if you are bringing a language of panic, of distress, of chaos, that's exactly what the people in your organization are going to experience. But if you define this moment as an opportunity, you know, as a space in which we can all grow, all of a sudden, and you're bringing the metaphors that are really powerful in terms of shifting. And I'll talk about a powerful metaphor under when we talk about teal organizations, when we talk about teams, is that there's an opportunity here to use language that really is inspirational and motivational. I keep saying, if you have DSTV, one of the things that I've noticed is during this season, I don't know if any of you have noticed this, there are a lot of superhero movies. And I imagine that the reason for this is that leadership at DSTV, the creative team at DSTV, understands that this is a hero moment, right? This is the moment in which we are looking for that motivational message. We are looking for that motivational speech. We are applauding the people who are bringing us out of panic and into a space of possibilities. And so for you as a leader, how do you frame this moment? For example, do you call this an anti-fragile moment or do you call it a resilient moment? There is a difference. Do we just bounce back or do we get better? Another thing is, do you frame this by looking at worst case scenarios? This is a beautiful time to look at worst case scenarios, not in panic, but in terms of ownership. So for example, I keep hearing leaders who are framing this as when we get back to normal or when this ends. The reality is that there's a lot of power jostling at the moment. If you're noticing the rhetoric in the news, you know, that is leading us towards the framework of actually this might not end anytime soon. And so if we're in this for another year and that's the worst case scenario, how do you frame your thinking at this time to be considering that? To be considering that we might be in this for 2 years. I remember watching, I feel it was the interview that Bill Gates had with, might have been with Trevor Noah, but maybe with somebody else. I can't remember now. I've seen Bill Gates way too many times during this whole scenario. But he said something about, you know, the fact that if we don't vaccinate and if we don't all get vaccinated and or find the vaccine first and then get vaccinated, that, you know, we might not be able to gather the way we've gathered before ever again. When he used the words ever again, I had to sort of do a double take. I was like, did he say ever again? And, you know, that's worst case scenario. So if you think of your business as never being able to do business as it's done it ever again, what frame does that create for you? What anti-fragility does that create for you? The other thing about finding your voice is being visible at this time. You know, this is not the time to put head in the sand. This is the time, like Rahm Emanuel once said, to not put a crisis to waste. There's a beautiful crisis that is happening in the world at the moment. It's a metamorphosis. It's a shift. And so for you as a leader, this is the time to be encouraged and be visible. I was speaking to Shirley Pearson, who is a strategic management expert, and she was talking about the fact that, you know, in this quiet time, this is the time for you as a leader to improve your leadership, right? Do the online courses like we're doing now, read books, you know, look for new material that actually improves your leadership. That is a powerful way to find voice during this time. Agility and pivoting, right? The ability to learn fast and embrace various new normals. Part of finding voice at this time is experimentation. Can you as a leader be open to experimentation? You know, so for example, we've been talking about holacracies for a very long time. Holacracies are organizations that don't have hierarchy. So they have very, what we call flat or fluid hierarchies. And so there's openness for self-management. I'll talk about that a little bit more just now. And so within this agile space, you are able to imagine that actually, since we are not in the same sort of setup as we were before, how can people self-lead? That's holacracy. Can you allow your people to self-lead? Can you allow your people to be creative in clusters that don't necessarily include you as the leader? That's what we call a holacracy. So there's a space for agility in this regard. And in fact, this model works much better than the model of vertical hierarchies, because within that space, people can't be creative and innovative in the same way because either they're afraid or they're being, you know, micromanaged, etc. So you want to open it up in that way. Another example that comes across of agility that I thought was fantastic is Kim Kardashian West's fragrance business, where, you know, they realized they had a raw material, which was alcohol in abundance because they make perfumes. And so in their agility, they were one of the first movers to say, we'll start to make sanitizers. And they were really quick. It was literally, I believe, in the first week that they realized, wait a minute, we've got lots of alcohol. Let's make sanitizers instead. So this is part of an opportunity that is available to you. How do you communicate in this moment in time? How do you direct? During stressful times, we know that people's ability to process and hold information reduces to about 20% capacity. And so the suggestion is that you are only communicating two or three ideas at a time and in long bursts. So not every single moment, right? Think about, what are the two or three things that can hold people together for this week? Okay, what are the two or three things for the next week? Because in that way, you don't overwhelm people where there's already distress. Deepening relationships with already existing customers. Again, Shirley, in an Instagram live conversation I was having with her, basically advised this might not be the time to be looking for new clients necessarily. In fact, this might be the moment for you to be deepening and cultivating the relationships with old clients. Clients will remember you for how you remembered them during this time. Are you speaking to them? Are you sending them messages that are helpful? This may be the time to grow your business through that cultivation of old relationships. And finally, your leadership voice should also be in that space of emotional intelligence. How intelligent are you to understand the personality dynamics of your people? During stressful times, shadows will start to emerge. During stressful times, different team members will respond to change differently. And yet we seem to address people as though they're the same. And that's not the leadership voice that will be useful through this time. The leadership voice that will be impactful is a voice that can really speak to the heart of what personally matters to different people. So different people are motivated by different things. Do you understand what those different things are? different personality types have different shadows, what we call their 10-year-old and the 3-year-old. Do you understand what those are? And so giving language to this helps us to be much more effective during this time. Let me move to anti-fragile teams. I want to make sure, I'll just do this for 5 minutes real quick and then we can go into the questions and answers. For me, three things matter. And by the way, these are just my suggestions of what it means to be anti-fragile. You can create your own. But I think for teams, for me, three things really matter. The first is, again, the fluidity and the agility of the team. I've already talked about holacracy. Can the team itself start to be creative around how to take on new form, new shape during this time? Zappos is a fantastic example of this. They've been the model for holacracy for a very long time. And I actually should check up how Zappos is doing. I haven't really checked up on them in a while. But they, you know, during the time when it was a big debate, they basically, like I said, dissolved all management and created what are called holocratic teams. What happens with holocratic teams is that teams form and dissolve based on a problem. So in current organizations, we have departments. There's a department that does this, and a department that does this, and a department that does that. In a holocratic model, we don't create departments. We create teams based on need. And that creates that fluidity. So for example, in this time now, you may recognize in your business that there's less of a need for, let's say, marketing as there is for crisis management with your clients. If you're holocratic, if you're fluid, if you're agile, you dissolve the marketing team, right? Because we don't need the marketing team right now. What we need is a crisis management team. And so you can very quickly shift to that. If something else happens tomorrow that COVID-19 morphs into something completely different, you already then have the agility to say, okay, how do we pivot and create new teams around this? So holocracies or holocratic teams, holocratic organizations are not afraid to form and shape based on the moment, not based on tradition. The other thing is that, you know, teams, if they're being anti-fragile during this time, should be doing deep work, right? Which is being able to concentrate and focus even with the noise that is happening outside of that. And the voice of the leader is what helps teams to do this. How do you set them up so that they can do deep work? So Best Buy, for example, years ago, before even COVID, of course, created a model in which all of their non-client facing staff could work from home. And what they found is that their productivity increased by 40%. You know, and I've been telling my clients this model for a very long time, and they're very resistant. Oh, people can't work from home. But of course, now we've been forced into this situation. And what you may find is there are certain team members who will immediately be able to refocus and recalibrate and work well. But there are some members who have to be really cultivated into this idea of deep work on your own. Right. So how do you set them up for that? How do you make sure as a leader that they have the resources in place to be able to do this? So are they set up well digitally? Are they able to access the information that they need? How are they able to work through distractions? You know, so for example, you may want to support your teams through, as a leader during this time, through making sure that their children are occupied so that they're not disturbing them. Right. So we assume that people at home are set up such that the environments aren't disruptive. But, you know, for example, if you have children, they're very disruptive. There's a lot of rupt that is going on within that space. And so how do you, for example, solve for not just the employee to do deep work, but for their children to be occupied so that their parent can do deep work, right? So these are some of the considerations to be making as you're doing this. And then finally, reinvention. I won't say too much about this. There's a wonderful book called Reinventing Organizations by Frederick Laloux. And I think that his principles of shifting in terms of the way we voice organizations, he actually talks about language, how we speak about organizations. And he's been talking about this for a long time, again pre-COVID-19, but his message, I think, has become very salient in this moment, which is how do you create organizations that what he calls teal organizations, that are not, for example, if you look in the first holograph, they're not about power, fear, or chaos, command, authority, but actually they're about this anti-fragility. They have a higher purpose. There's distributed decision-making, et cetera, et cetera. So there's an opportunity within this space to reinvent. And one of the powerful concepts, and that's what I'll leave us with, is he talks about being able to sense and respond versus predict and control. And so the old model of organizations, of leadership, is prediction and control, right? Strategy meetings, being able to set up budgets for a specific problem that we perceive is the problem to solve. That's not necessarily paradoxical. And so in predicting and controlling, we are assuming the world remains the same. However, in sensing and responding, we are like an organism. We assume that as an organism, when things change, we have the ability to sense into what is really happening because all of our antenna are up, because we are not hierarchical. We have distributed leadership. Everybody is an eye and an ear. And because of that sensing, we can then respond, not react. Respond. And so he really here, he speaks to this evolutionary purpose, you know, and he gives the example of nature, that nature is a sensor and a responder. So, you know, the greatest organism in nature, like dinosaurs, can be threatened and in fact completely exterminated. But that doesn't stop nature. Nature continues because it senses and responds and then it adapts. So I'll also advise that you look at Gartner's model of organizational resilience layers. They use the term resilience. I'm using anti-fragile, but really to think about these key cogs in your organization, your leadership, your culture, the people, the processes, the infrastructure, and to do an exercise around these and say, you know, how are they anti-fragile during this time? And if they're not, how do we make them more anti-fragile? So I will stop there so that we can have some reflections and questions. Sorry, I went 6 minutes over the 30-minute stipulated time, but hopefully this gives us enough time to be able to work through some of everything that I've said so very quickly.
Not at all. I think always I found when I've listened to you, that everything you've had to say triggers a thought process within myself, which makes me reflect on my processes as I go through them, and always in a different way from how it's been presented to me. Because with leadership, I guess the narrative has always been, as a leader, you must lead from the front all the time. And we tend to forget that leaders are also just people who are going through things, and this crisis, like any other, is shocking to the system. And like you said, when you heard Bill Gates saying that it might be a while before we gather again like this, I similarly read something that was written by professor at Harvard that said it could be 2022, and I was going, what do you mean 2022? As in the year 2022 or on the 22nd? So I think also not being able to internalize and understand, it's as humanity, we're in a rush to want to reset all the time. And resetting to us is going back to what we're used to.
Yes.
And so it's that continuous, I want to go back to what I'm used to. So everybody right now is wanting to go back to normal.
Yes.
And we forget that normal is something that we create. Normal is something that a society we've accepted as this is something that we can work within the confines of and be comfortable in.
Yes.
And all of a sudden we're finding ourselves in a space where normal is not what we're used to, but it's a whole different conversation. And I had a discussion with somebody yesterday when I said the most shocking part about this is, for me, is the realization that this lockdown, this way of doing things, could be the future going forward. And our resistance to it is just prolonging the transformation we have to go through. And maybe looking at it and understanding that if this is the future going forward, how do we adapt? Because as we have seen through history, it is things like dinosaurs that didn't adapt, that got extinct. And when you don't adapt, you will get extinct. What does this look like for the human race? We have created so many norms that are now being shifted. We've created steel birds that take us across the world that now all of a sudden can endanger us by just moving us from one place to another. We've created atmospheres where we want to converge as communities. But even in the essence of how the universe allows us to exist, the internet was created over a long period of time, and our interaction with it and the different ways how we've interacted with it has changed to prepare us for this moment. So it's quite, it's one of those things where you start thinking as a leader, what does this mean to me? And how am I going to adapt? How am I going to look at it? And I think from what you've said and what I've learned from your presentation, it's going to take a lot of introspection for a lot of leaders, a lot of finding themselves. And I think one of the questions I'd like to ask you is, what are the biggest stumbling blocks you've found with people in leadership that you've been working with, especially during this time?
I think a big one is what I was speaking about earlier, which is the frame. Is that a lot of people are saying, let's just get through this. And when things become normal and when we get to the end. And so there's a big possibility we sleep our way through this moment instead of being awake to what it's actually teaching us. So there's a resistance. And I find that resistance then creates being reactionary. And so when we are being called to really sense and respond into something, but we are being reactionary, we are really denying a leadership moment, isn't it? We are not interacting with the reality as it presents itself, but we are interacting with what we would like things to be. And we will find that those leaders will be left behind. You know, I think another thing is fixed mindsets, what Carol Dweck calls a fixed mindset, which is, you know, this idea that we cannot expand and grow ourselves. This is what we do, and this is what we do, full stop. And I think one of the things, you know, that's become apparent is there is a call to leadership to start to reimagine ourselves. So someone in a conversation I was in said so beautifully, revisit your intention as a leader. What was the intention behind you starting what you're doing? Because the intention is untouched and unaffected by this, right? That's the only thing that remains untouched. Everything else can be touched in your business, but intention is untouched. And if you go back to that and revisit that, it will direct you. It will be the guiding light as to what to do in this moment. And if we can sit with that, then what we find is possibilities versus restrictions become apparent, right? So if your intention was to serve through whatever it is that you're doing, then what you're going to notice is that there were always multiple ways to serve. There was never one way to serve. And that's what allows those pivots. So for me, I think, you know, what I'm noticing is the people who are thriving during this time are people who are framing, who are returning to intention, who are open to remodeling. And if you're not willing to do that, then quite frankly, they're just businesses that are not going to make it. I think the unfortunate thing is, you know, as I've been reflecting on this more and more, especially around the concept of anti-fragility, if you actually think about it, startups and smaller businesses are actually much more anti-fragile. Bigger systems, bigger institutions, which have an old way of doing things with all of their cash flows and all of that, actually, I think are less anti-fragile because they've got such a defined way of being and doing. Whereas for us who are smaller businesses, we're actually more flexible, right? We're able to pivot. We're able to make decisions much quicker and say, okay, guys, this is what we're going to do now. And so I think it's an incredible opportunity for us to harness in this time to say, you know, what does anti-fragility look for us, and how can we leverage our size, right? How can we leverage the fact that we are much more flexible?
And then a question that's coming through, it's coming from Jasmine, and the question is, when you're looking at family businesses and family leaders, how do we apply anti-fragility to family business leaders as they're leading on two fronts?
Yeah. And I remember you were talking about this yesterday, that there's the systems and the processes, and then there's sort of the emotions and the relationships.
Mm-hmm.
I think anti-fragility, you know, so if we look at the definition of it, being able to become better, I think a fundamental thing is to be able to shift the values. So what do we, what have we valued before that has been important to us as a family? What have we valued before that has brought us together? And what can we value differently during this time? So every organization, every family has a value system, conscious or unconscious. I always say, whether you're conscious of the values, they are directing your life all the time. Mm-hmm. And so if, as families, how do we redefine those values during this time so that they actually allow for improvement? So for example, if the value was, let's say, and this is one of my values, and you know, freedom, if the value was freedom, if the value was to remain independent, because that's what we want as a family, right? Could a new value be partnership? Is the only way we thrive and grow through this to actually partner, which is something we were not willing to do before, right? So we were closed in to ourselves, but maybe there's family 2 and 3, maybe there's organization 2 and 3 that we could now enter into relationship with, that we were against before, that would actually allow us to thrive much better during this time. So in the values and relationship space, which is usually what a family unit is about, I think there's an opportunity to revisit what those values are and to ask, do they still serve us? Values aren't static. They're also like organisms. They should grow and they should expand. And also, I think another question is, how do we deepen the roots of our relationships? So the trees that you saw at the beginning of my presentation, I put them there on purpose because for me, they're an example of anti-fragility. So when Hurricane Katrina happened, New Orleans was one of the biggest hit cities. And there's a street, an avenue called St. Charles Avenue, which has these huge live oak trees. And while many other things around that area were destroyed, homes, people's businesses, people were killed, these trees literally were essentially untouched. And in fact, they became better. And why that was their root system is very strong, right? So they, underneath the soil, even though you can't see it on top of the soil, live oaks are very good at entangling with each other and holding on. And so the winds, when the wind forces came in, they were actually unable to uproot the trees. And I think this is a powerful metaphor, again, to think of your family is, this is a time to deepen relationship. This is a time to heal wounds. This is a time to have courageous conversations about any of the contentions that have been taking place. It provides a moment of pause where we can deepen and strengthen the roots and really be entangled in a way that allows the nutrients of our business to travel amongst us, because we've made a purposeful choice to be much more united during this time. So again, this is a moment of pause. It's a moment of choice. And so what you do with that is really dependent on, again, how do you frame this moment and what opportunities does it present? What possibilities does it present for you to create, to create newness during this time?
Okay. If anyone has any questions, please go to the chat box at the bottom of your screen or the question and answer and just type them in so that we can give them through to Rachel. Nikki, have you got any questions?
Yes, I do. On courageous conversations within the family and the family businesses, quite often in families we have we swept a lot of issues under the carpet, and, you know, we refused to talk about some issues that we may have just to keep the appearance of, you know, harmony. How can we, in this season, start to address those things we swept under the carpet, whether they be family business matters or family matters or business matters, or how can we start to become courageous in having those conversations?
Yes. So I think, first of all, how do we become courageous? It's understanding the process of teaming, the stages of teaming. And so all of us will know that the stages of teaming are forming, storming, norming, performing. And many organizations, including family-run businesses, I imagine, want to rush to the performance, right? So there's a push for let's perform, let's be excellent, let's have peak performance. But actually, these things happen in sequence. We don't get to norm unless we've stormed. And people often forget that principle. You can't bypass the stage of storming. And in African culture specifically, we don't like storming. I find, I've worked with leaders from 47 African countries, and this is something that is true across the board, right? Either we're shouting at each other dramatically, or we're just not really having the conversation at all. The storming, the norming is not going to happen until we storm, and therefore we can't perform until we've stormed, right? And so the courage is about understanding that conflict is normal. I think that's another reframe that I like to introduce to people. Conflict is normal. There's nothing abnormal about conflict. In fact, much of what we admire in nature, and we like to use this example from biomimicry, much of what we admire in nature was formed through conflict. So if you think of mountains and canyons and how they form from tectonic pressure underneath the earth, or you think of pearls and how they form from conflict within the oyster shell, right? Rivers form from, you know, from the conflict of how they end up with the I'm now forgetting the term when they do the contouring. I've forgotten the term. But if you look geographically at much of the stuff that we love and enjoy, it was formed through conflict. So through tensions, through frictions. And so why should it be any different for human beings? You know, but for whatever reason, we don't like the discomfort. And I say, sit with the discomfort. It's okay. Conflict is normal. And in fact, it's a gift, because what conflict does is it shows us where the relationship is. You know, so it reflects as a mirror to us where we actually are, and presents a beautiful opportunity to really start to say the things that are true. And then, you know, there's a model for courageous conversations too. I don't think we have time to get into it now. I'd be happy to have a separate conversation with people around that. But, you know, there are ways in which we can speak to each other that don't make us defensive. You know, so for example, coming with accusations isn't helpful. So if you're trying to have a courageous conversation, you know, and you start with, you are the biggest barrier to the success of this family business, not helpful, because immediately a person is going to go, whoa, wait a minute. What about the 10 things that I did last week that nobody else was willing to do? But if you come with observations, objective observations that say there were 3 things you were meant to do and you didn't deliver on those 3 things, and here are the 3 things, right? What you've done is you've made it objective versus subjective. You're not accusing, you're observing. And, you know, those subtle nuances make a difference to how people can receive information. We know, for example, that in a moment of feedback, the body's temperature reduces. Why? Because the minute people hear, we need to have a conversation, they get nervous. And so their system starts to go, ooh, survival mode, fight, flight, freeze. You know, and the brain gets dramatic. I always like to say the brain is a drama queen or a drama king. It's always solving for threats. That's what the brain does. The brain is 4 times more likely to solve for a threat than it is for a reward. So when we enter into these conversations, we must think of them as being sacred, but we must think of them as being absolutely necessary. So storming is, it's a reframe of understanding that conflict is good, that conflict actually helps us, and it's the bridge that we actually use to get to norming and performing.
Wow. I think that the whole conflict thing is a whole discussion on its own.
Yeah.
Because definitely in family businesses, you find in any relationship, really, there's a lot of sources of conflict, and mostly from perceived more than reality. And that can cause quite a fuss. I don't see any questions coming through. So I'm assuming that everybody has gotten value and still are digesting everything that Rachel had to share. So I just ask if you could just share how people can get hold of you or engage you going forward.
Absolutely. So you can go to our website, narachileadership.com. There you'll be able to see what are the offerings that we have. And so you can just click book a training or book a coaching, and we can have a conversation from there. Rina, who I also believe is on the call, but I'm not sure because I can't see who's all on the call. But you can also contact Rina on rina@narachileadership.com. She is our COO, and she takes care of partner and client engagements. And so you can reach out to her. And Rina is spelled R-E-E-N-A. But also you can follow us on social media. So Narachi Leadership is on Instagram, on Facebook, and on LinkedIn. And we post there quite regularly. And during COVID-19, we are having live conversations on all sorts of topics that we believe will be supportive during this time. And I've said we are in the process of actually preparing for a conversation around domestic violence and the kind of support that we could start to engage with during this time when people are forced to be in one space together for long periods of time. So yeah, I hope that's clear.
Yes, I have just one feedback from that I'd like to share. With a great discussion with Rachel. Thank you so much. And I think people are very happy with what you had to share with us. So I appreciate that, Rachel.
Such a pleasure. Thank you for having me. Thank you so much. Thank you,
everyone. Thank you very much, Rachel. That was excellent. And lots of food for thought. Yes, thank you for your generosity of your time and your expertise. We really appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Okay, goodbye. Stay safe.
Bye-bye. Me too. Bye-bye.